Invite you all to turn in your Bibles to John chapter 15. We'll be reading verses 1 through 8. And as we read these verses, this is, of course, again, another one of Jesus' statements, self-disclosure, I am. And we're reading these stories, we're listening to these teachings through three different lenses. What is Jesus saying about God? And by connection or extension, what is Jesus saying about himself? And as those who are yoked to him by his grace, what is Jesus saying about us? Whenever we hear Jesus saying, I am, there is kind of a reflective, you are. Whether or not you believe it at any one point in time, kind of like Danny was saying, deeply inscribed in our spiritual DNA, is the capacity to grow in exactly what Jesus is speaking of. And so today we hear Jesus' famous statement, I am the true vine. And in order to hear this, I think for all it's worth, it's helpful to know a bit of history, a bit of the history of this image of the vine. When Jesus, for instance, talked about being the bread from heaven, it was in response to a discussion that was being had about manna. When Jesus says, next week, I believe, I am the light of the world, it is just after the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot, which has a very elaborate lighting ceremony. It's just before, apparently, the Feast of Dedication, which is Hanukkah, which we all understand as a festival of lights. And Jesus uses the opportunity to talk about light. Even last week, when we talked about Jesus the Good Shepherd, it evokes all sorts of memories and traditions and stories about God's leaders who shepherded God's people over time. Today we hear Jesus say, I am the true vine. And that's a symbol that's used often enough, not just in Israel, but about Israel. And sometimes it is very, very good. Psalm 80, verse 8. You transplanted a vine from Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. Or, more specifically, Isaiah 5, 7. The vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the nation of Israel, and the people of Judah are the vines God delighted in. There's also the bad and the ugly. Jeremiah, for instance, 2, 21. I had planted you like a choice vine of sound and reliable stock. How then did you turn against me into a corrupt and wild vine? Is this very specific connection between the people and the image, very much like a coat of arms might represent a family, or the bald eagle might represent in some way or symbolize America. You know, even in Herod's temple, which was the temple that Jesus knew, over the temple entrance was a great golden vine. And from that vine, the historian Josephus tells us, hung grape clusters as big as a human being. So with grapes about as big as your head. There was no mistaking the presence of the grapevine there in the center of public worship. It was covered in pure gold. It was so well known, even the Roman historian Tacitus writes about these features. So what did Jesus have in his own mind? What did he know people could draw out of their own resource bank when he spoke about himself, the true vine? He's saying that the same authority that God had given the people of Israel to be his chosen people is an authority that he bears. And he says, I am. Not only aligning himself with the people and the destiny of Israel, but with the God who has called them together. I am the true vine, the source of Israel's own strength. Now, holding all that in our heads, let's turn in our Bibles and listen to all Jesus might have to say to us. I am the true vine. My Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you may bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. May God bless the reading and the hearing of the word today. Helps to remember as we begin today that Jesus is offering these words at a key time in the relationship that he has and has built with his disciples. It's part of what scholars call the farewell discourse of Jesus from chapters 14 through 17 in a series of teachings and prayer. Jesus is offering himself in ways that are memorable and durable and sustainable for what he knows is coming, but they have not yet come to accept. That the journey that he will take to follow God will take him to the cross at Calvary. He will die and he will be gone from their sight. Their faith is going to be tested sorely at that point. We all know in the broad sense what it is like to be touched by grief. It's a universal human experience. The experience of growing in relationship and coming to rely in one way or another on certain people to be landmarks on our horizon. We just begin intuitively to orient ourselves to them. And when they are removed from our sight, even the most familiar things start to feel disorienting. Jesus is preparing them for that crisis of faith that is sure to come when he is gone from their sight. After all, Jesus, in chapter 14, had already told them that they would do greater things than they had seen in him. Imagine that. They had seen Jesus do some amazing things, feeding the multitude, healing the sick, driving out demons, even raising the dead. And Jesus says, greater things. When he's gone, how quickly would the temptation come upon them simply to give up the project? Because if they're human, like I am, they would look at themselves and say, I do not have that kind of power. I do not possess in myself the necessary stuff of working God's will in this world. I can't do the things I saw Jesus did. I may as well hang it up. I may as well quit. And it's to those hearts, it's to those minds that Jesus speaks today. For those who know that there is more work to do, that is more than we can accomplish on our own, and yet we are constantly, relentlessly aware of our own shortcomings and our own frailty. And so Jesus calls upon his disciples to remain connected to God in him. He calls us in today's translation to remain in him. Eugene Peterson, in his great Message translation / paraphrase, uses a broader phrase, make your home in me as I make my home in you. My favorite rendering still remains the old one, abide in me. As I abide in you, abiding in Christ is the key to understanding our place in times just like this. It's such an important word. Jesus uses it 10 different times in the 15th chapter of John's Gospel. abide. But sometimes we may be also tempted to think that abiding is a very passive exercise, that somehow in simply sitting back and being, the world takes care of itself and God takes care of it all. It's a little more nuanced than that. It's a lot more engaged than that. In order to abide takes a certain level of intentionality that doesn't come easy for us. It's holding in tension two different temptations. Sometimes we want to be the vine itself. We want to be the source of our own strength and the source of our own inspiration and the source of our own sustenance and everything else. Just as tempting is the desire, I think, to be the fruit. Sometimes we want to be all of the outcomes, and we spend our whole lives trying to control and manipulate our environment or ourselves or other people simply to bring about a certain set of outcomes at a prescribed amount of time according to our convenience. Jesus doesn't call us to be either the vine or the fruit. Jesus calls us to be a branch, to be spiritually healthy. To be thriving and growing is to embrace our vocation as a branch, with one hand, as it were, on the vine, the other one holding out the fruit that grows by God's work in us. So how do we be a branch? How do we abide in this way? Well, the good news and hard news is that Jesus makes it clear that a big part of being a branch is being close and personal to pruning. Branches get pruned. Jesus says that God is the gardener, and sometimes the gardener will prune the vines. When we prune the vines, we remove not only the excessive growth, but also the dead wood that robs the vine of the necessary energy for it to be able to make the fruit. Now, in order to understand pruning the way Jesus is talking about it, I think you need to dispense with the Christopher school of pruning. Both a quick look at my yard or even the top of my head will tell you that I have sort of a slash and burn approach to pruning. The shorter, the better. Let it grow back when it's ready. But listen to how an experienced vine grower in this case, it's the Matthiessen Vineyards in Napa Valley, in one of their recent newsletters, described pruning the vine. Why do we prune? They ask in their newsletter. Because if the vine is not pruned, it reverts very quickly to its wild nature, climbing everywhere with its long, sinewy trunk and tiny, scraggly bunches of uneven grapes. Every year, we need to assess the growth of the vines and decide whether to prune them back harder or to let them grow a bit bigger or return them to the same size and shape they were the year before. Part of the pleasure of pruning is that it is an art, like woodworking or ceramics, a blending of form and vision. Assessing the vine's growth and adjusting the pruning cuts to its individual differences. It's also a tactile relationship with nature, the living vines that could easily grow wild, guided by our hands to line up in vineyard rows, ready to bear another crop of wine grapes for our pleasure and nourishment. If we prune correctly, the vine will be balanced. That means it will grow just enough. If it grows too much or too fast, the resulting wines will be thin and simple. If it grows too little, the wine will be bitter and hard. The right amount of growth, what we call balanced growth for the best fruit, is our goal. If the vine is not pruned, it reverts very quickly to its wild nature, climbing everywhere with its long, sinewy trunk and tiny, scraggly bunches of uneven grapes. Doesn't that sound like life? Like a lot of our life. Have you ever performed an audit of your life? Not just about your time, but about your spiritual energy? Have you ever had the opportunity to sit back and just simply look at where it goes? Janelle taught me this practice one time. She picked it up from a mentor. And it goes like this. Just look at your calendar and be kind of fearless in listing out everything that's calling for your attention and your time. And then as you make that list, by every single thing, put a D or an F next to it. Now, those aren't grades. D means drains me. F means fills me. And the quick and dirty calculation is, if there are more things in your life that drain you than fill you, you're running at a spiritual deficit that is unsustainable. Your life becomes crystallized, hard, increasingly challenging, bitter, resentful. Things that used to give you pleasure or joy all of a sudden become a source of frustration or even regret. If you have more time, you might be able to do this more sensitively. Maybe write down in your life those things that deserve your greatest energy. What would those things be for you that deserve the most spiritual energy? Though we're hesitant to admit it, I'll say it out loud. Self-care is an incredibly important thing. Making sure you've given yourself enough time to sleep and keep your body rested. Enough time for recreation, for you to be refreshed. Enough time to spiritual devotion so your body and your spirit may be strengthened in your relationship with God. All of these and more are activities that you need to nurture and sustain yourself. There are many other areas in our life that require that kind of effort and energy as well. What about the other things that deserve your spiritual energy? Your family and your friendships and your time at work. These are all really important aspects of our lives. Perhaps you can't bring your best because you're already sapped, because it's been bled out somewhere else. Take a look at your life and ask yourself, where is your energy going? Think of all of those things that might rob you of your best energy. Things that you need to learn to delegate, that don't work really directly with your gifts, that aren't really an expression of your purpose or who you are made to be. You might actually be surprised at the number of things you devote a great deal of your energy and even your time to that could be done by someone else. In fact, and this is a hard realization, there's always someone else who can do your job. In time, there's going to be somebody who is going to take care of your house. That spot that you leave vacant after volunteering in it for so long will be filled by another volunteer. And at the same time, we have been given in our lives a precious small percentage of things that can only be attended to by ourselves. I'm talking now about those family relationships. I'm talking now about the relationships that we build with our children. The relationships that we form in fellowship with one another as a church. These are things that matter, that can easily be eclipsed by the tyranny of our to-do list. Pruning is not just God's job. It also is a responsibility of ourselves. Every time I perform this audit, I identify something else that maybe needs to be set down, given away, shared, or another way appropriated rather than holding it on all to myself. It's not saying that it's unimportant. It's not saying anything about the value of that work. It is saying that I need to retain sufficient space in my life, and you need to retain sufficient space in your life for God to keep the productive things producing. And I'm not just talking about the daily direction of our energy. How much of your energy is spent carrying around that dead wood that Jesus talks about? That's a whole nother dimension of pruning, isn't it? Sometimes there are branches that even remain connected to the vine, but they've died. They don't necessarily sap energy, but they require energy just to prop them up. How does that happen in your life? Is it in your regrets? Are you living too much in your past? Are you carrying around resentments or bitterness or envy? Dead wood. They have to be cut away at some point for the healthy branches to grow, to thrive, and to produce. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Mission. Has anyone ever seen The Mission? Jeremy Irons, Robert De Niro, fabulous movie. Won the Palm of Honor at the Cannes Film Festival, I think, in 1987. So it's not new, but it stands the test of time. It's a story of a Jesuit named Gabriel. He's played by Jeremy Irons, by the way. And he's commissioned to go to South America and there to establish a mission community among an indigenous people called the Guarani. And it's there in South America, in Paraguay, where Gabriel meets a man named Mendoza, who's played by Robert De Niro. Mendoza is trapped by the time he's met by Gabriel in a prison of his own making. He's literally imprisoned for taking the life of his brother in a jealous rage. And there in his grief is confronted by his longtime vocation as a slave trader. Among other people that he enslaved, the Guarani are among them. And there in prison, he is near unto death. Gabriel goes to intervene in his life and invites him to a penitent journey, if he has the courage to take it. At the end of his rope, Mendoza, and after a long pause, that villager takes the knife from his throat, cuts away his burden, and sends that burden tumbling down the mountain, washed away in the river. It never fails to get me when I see that burden washed away. That is the good news of pruning. That those things you can no longer control, those parts of your past that you wish could have been different, those roads not taken, those do not determine the future you have in Christ. In cutting away those things we can no longer afford to bear, Jesus is offering us a life that can be fruitful. You may not have experiences like Mendoza's to be cut away, but if God's power and God's presence can even be known in our times of pain like that, it can be found in all the challenges that we face. There is hope for everyone. There is hope for you. There is hope for me. And so staying connected with Christ involves being willing to cut away those things which no longer serve any purpose for God's glory in this world, the things that are unnecessary for us to live our lives. And the other side of it is that we must remain connected to the vine. Imagine being that branch. You're holding on to the vine with one, you're bearing fruit with the other. Which way are you going to look? You can look to one side and you can look to the vine, which is your source. Or you can look to the fruit. And I think our daily and regular effectiveness is going to depend on where we turn our attention and where we believe that magic of fruitfulness really happens. Does it happen when we focus on the fruit? Of course, when we're producing fruit and things are going well, we start to feel pretty good about things. We feel good about ourselves. But if we turn our attention to those times when we're not as fruitful, when things don't come as easily, when we don't see the results, even of our earnest, honest effort, that can be a blow deep down. When we focus on success, when we focus on achievements, when we focus on appearances, and it becomes doubly difficult when we compare ourselves to others, as we obsess over fruit, we start to believe that being fruitful is up to us. I'm here to remind you today that Jesus said fruitfulness is not up to us. That is not our job. Our job is to be a branch and to be humble enough to let God's power flow through us. Even though that sounds very simple, it can be very confusing. And this is especially true when we draw our self-worth from our fruit. It's an old South African pastor named Andrew Murray who said it this way: do not confuse work with fruit. There may be a good deal of work for Christ that is not the fruit of the heavenly vine. And so how do I cope with that feeling? So often what I do when I don't see fruitfulness is I work harder, doing the same things over and over again with more intensity, fervently praying and hoping that this time it will take. Because deep down, I feel like fruitfulness or a lack of fruitfulness is a reflection of who I am. And is in some way a measure or a mark or a demerit. I have to remind myself of this regularly because I so often lose sight from the vine to the fruit. I say all this not because it is a call to work less. It is a call to fret less, to worry less. When I'm overwhelmed with the challenges in my life or in my family or in this church, that I can continue to do the work I know I'm called to do without fretting quite so much about the results. In being connection first and results as an outcropping of that, it gives me a sustainable and satisfying life that lets me know that I am loved and useful in God's hands. Now, I had a concluding story that was actually pretty safe. It was about Adoniram Judson, who was one of our Baptist forebears, first Baptist missionary with his wife Anne in Burma. Extraordinary person. The translation that he rendered into some of Burmese language is still used today by many Burmese Christians, who now number in the hundreds of thousands. At Judson's death, there were somewhere between a dozen and two dozen after 35 years of ministry. Fruitfulness that came at a later time. But instead, I wanted to talk for a minute about myself, and this feels risky because I'm going to be disclosing a part of myself kind of publicly that I want you to handle with care. And as I share it, I do so maybe not just honoring Mother's Day, which is today, but also May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. This is an important conversation, particularly in light of the pandemic. For me, the pandemic was a crucible like I could not have expected. We were all confronted with our own challenges. We were certainly publicly confronted with an incredible challenge of physical bodily health, harm and help. And we've had to make all kinds of weird and wonky decisions I hope we never have to make again. One of the things that I experienced in the first 3-4 months of the pandemic was something of a perfect storm, where a long-standing, long-burning sense of self-defeat, a slow-burning depression, like one of those fires that burns below the surface in a peat bog, finally flared up in a way that could not be controlled or contained by work. You know why? We had to close church. And my greatest coping mechanism was to do more and more and more in church to cover up the voices that told me I was insufficient, not good enough, nobody liked me, I'm not good, somebody else could be better, all the rest. It's just an unceasing cycle. No one's to blame for that. It's a fluke of biochemistry and a coming together of a thousand life experiences and the way I inappropriately appropriated them over time. Long and short of it, when you have a lot of time to yourself, when there's nothing to do, when even your preaching becomes podcasted, when there's no way to get feedback about how you're doing, when you feel lost and confused like that, you're predisposed to depression, it all colludes into a nearly life-threatening catastrophe. People have noticed I've lost some weight. People have said, you seem a little lighter on your feet. What's your secret? They want to hear keto or, you know, I'm running 10 miles a day or something like that. That's not the answer. For me, the answer has been I've slept more. For the first time in 20 years, I'm getting 8 hours of sleep a night, like we're supposed to. But for years, when I went to bed, I'd stay up as late as I could so I could sleep like a dead person. Because if I had time at night before my brain would shut off, I would hear constantly the indictments of my own spirit about my unworthiness. Clinical terms, severely depressed. In spiritual terms, at the end of my rope. The pandemic fast-tracked my awareness of just how critical my need was. And for that, I'm grateful. Along with being grateful to a believing spouse who really looked after me and provoked me to get the kind of help that I needed. A gracious church community, a family that holds me and loves me. Above all, as I've gone through that journey, the one thing I needed to remind myself of and grow more and more at home in is the ongoing abiding presence of God, even in that dark valley. I wish I had a tidy summary to all of this because I'm still on this journey. Still getting the help I need, still taking some medicine that might be forever. But what it's allowed me to do for the first time in a long time is to focus on those things that are really important, beginning with my belovedness, my connection, believing that God found it worth it to sacrifice God's own self for me, just as for you. And from that point, to rest and abide in the work that only God can do. Where will you focus? On your fruitfulness? On your output? What people can see? Being a branch requires not only pruning away those things that are no longer useful, it also requires that we focus upon the source of all of our strength, of all of our renewal, of all of our hope. And in focusing on the risen Christ and abiding in Him, we surrender to that, acknowledging that we can't do it on our own. That we don't have the power in and of ourselves, but when we are a branch, we become a conduit directly connected to the gracious, loving power of God. And the fruit that God will produce is fruit that will last, and it is fruit that will glorify God, not us. Be a branch. That's our job. The rest, according to Jesus, is in God's loving hands. And if you are as thankful as I am for that, say amen. You know, as we continue our service today, we do so recognizing a need for response right where you are, whether it's to offer your gifts and practice your generosity to the Lord through the ministry of this church. And beyond that, to recognize those places you need to set down or take up in order to connect more deeply and fully with God. Recognize that you are not only worthy, you are loved and embraced. Whenever you reach out to God, you never reach out in vain. Let's take the time now, as Nyssa leads us, to respond.